Hey, this is Dimitri from Off, and you are listening to the Almighty Vinyl Guide, which we love, and we're very happy to be here on the show talking about not only Free LSD, our new album, but its companion piece, FLSD EP, which comes out on Record Store Day, April 22nd, and the only place you can get it is at your local store, so go do it.
This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VINYLGUIDE10. And now, on with the show.
Ah, well, buenos dias, mi amigos. It's Nate. Welcome to episode 389 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And with this week being the lead up to Record Store Day, I thought I'd reach out to a few friends of the show to talk about some releases that are going to be in the independent record stores this Saturday morning, April 22nd. Now, today we're going to talk to Dimitri Coates of the band Off, who has a new EP available on April 22nd, Record Store Day. It's called the FLSD EP, so grab an Off EP while you can. Now, it features new music not available elsewhere, pretty amazing package, and again, limited numbers. So when you see it on Record Store Day, grab the FLSD EP. Now, today, Dimitri and I talk all about that EP, as well as an update on many things in the Off universe, including the movie Free LSD. What's happening with that? We talked to Dimitri about the making of the album and the movie, moving the band's music catalog to Fat Possum Records, some of the hidden details in the Free LSD gatefold packaging, working with Raymond Pettibone, Dimitri's partnership with Keith Morris, and what's next for Off. And the answer to that question may surprise or even sadden you, so keep a tissue handy. We go deep on this one. Oh, and by the way, there is an extended version of this interview available only to show supporters at patreon.com/vinylguide. Supporters of the show get an extra 20-25 minutes of this discussion, detail on Off, the Free LSD movie, and more. A bunch of extras. Of course, it's commercial free and high resolution as well. Extended interview available only at patreon.com/vinylguide. So there we go. Let's head into today's conversation with Mr. Dimitri Coates of the band Off. All right. This week on the Vinyl Guide, we've got with us Dimitri Coates, who you likely know from Off, and he's been very busy the last few years. Free LSD is an album that I was waiting for such a long time. It's such an ambitious project. Where do you start with a project that includes music and a movie? Was it always envisioned as this big, multi-dimensional project?
The idea for the film came to me on a hike, like just the backbone of the story. Mm-hmm. And I ran it by Keith. I was a little nervous about the idea. I think the record definitely was influenced by some of the subject matter in the script and vice versa. We worked on both those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think the album is pretty freestanding most of the time. It delves a little bit more into conspiracy theories and things that Keith was addressing on his Blow Mind Show podcast. And, you know, we both wanted to know, we both knew that we wanted to do something very different than we had done with the first three records. And after three records like that, and knowing who Keith is, and knowing, you know, what else I can contribute artistically as a songwriter and as a guitar player and as a producer, you know, I just said, I don't want to make another record that's reminiscent of anything we've done up to this point. It's time for us to like do something really, really bold. And I just challenged him, said, look, you know, you're so much more than Keith Morris from Black Flag and Keith Morris from the Circle Jerks. You know, I think it there must be kind of pressure on him at times to be this certain figure. And if you get to know him, his tastes in art and music are much deeper than that. You know, he's like a closet prog guy, and he loves psychedelic and weird music, angular stuff, artsy stuff. And he's, you know, a film buff and a pop culture buff. And I he's always talking about, like, it would be so cool. I would, if this band asked me to like sing with them, I would just jump on it. You know, he's always talking about how he wants to do something different. So I said, okay, dude, like, you know, we've made these weird videos. Like, how many more are we going to make? They keep ramping up. They keep getting crazier. We have to make a movie. Let's just do it, you know, and let's let the album be this, let's think of it as a soundtrack. And by doing that, it totally freed us, you know, because I would say, like, it's not a normal record. This is just like a, you know, this permission to get, like, really creative in ways we haven't before. Let's, every time we come to any kind of fork in the road, let's go the opposite way we would normally go. And that's what we did. And he, I think, initially struggled in terms of how he was going to do that lyrically, because he's used to doing things a certain way. He's very, he likes routines, and it takes a lot to convince him to change directions. But once he latches on to something, there's no turning back. And he got this sparkle in his eye, and he understood that we had to really, really go for it and risk, you know, making fools of ourselves. But often that's where the real fertile stuff lies. And so I convinced him to write lyrics through a different lens. Whether or not he believes in conspiracies doesn't really matter. It's just an artistic exercise. He has this podcast where, you know, whatever, it's he has a fascination with this stuff, and it's entertaining to him, as it is to a lot of us. And you know, it's not about, like, are you on this side of the fence or that side of the fence. It's just an exercise in looking at things through a different window and still maintaining those themes that are prevalent in everything we've done in the past. It's still like, you know, hey, why are they hiding this from us? And fuck, you know, it's still fuck the government. It's, you know, like, hey, if aliens exist, you know, we want the truth, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know? The anger's still there, but it's almost you double down on the paranoia a bit. Coming out of Wasted Years, you had to undergo a big change, kind of the caterpillar to the butterfly. The band changed, the label changed, and it's been nearly, I didn't realize Wasted Years is getting on 10 years old. So you guys have been working on, 2014. So you guys have been working on Free LSD and the movie and this concept for nearly a decade. That's a lot of work, especially for...
I mean, we've made other attempts at actually recording this record with, you know, different versions of the lineup, you know, and we started filming and, you know, working on what I thought was going to be the film. And then after a couple of failed attempts at doing all of that, it became painfully obvious that we had to just scrap everything. And, you know, I kept the, you know, foundation of the script, and we had those songs, but we needed different players, you know.
This is Watermelon, right? So how different is Watermelon from Free LSD?
Not very.
Okay.
It's not very different. The basis of the narrative in the film is, you know, The skeleton of that is the same. The songs are the same. Those did not change. But, you know, as we found our lineup, you know, and after rewriting for different people, you know, it, in a way, it helped because it kept getting better. And when we brought Autry and Justin into the fold, you know, all of a sudden we have a bass player who is just, he was a real fan of Off to begin with. And so there was this kind of renewed energy that came in, where all of a sudden, you know, like he's playing in one of his favorite bands, and he's playing with his fingers. He's adding like this, more of like a Black Sabbath tone, as opposed to like, you know, picking and more Ramones or, you know, that kind of thing. And then we, you know, through Autry, we found Justin, and, you know, I can't say enough about, the way he was able to raise the bar and take these already adventurous songs and material and take it even further. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's, you know, a top-notch jazz drummer. He's toured with Herbie Hancock. He plays with Thundercat. And it was just great timing. I mean, the pandemic, in a way, I mean, part of the reason, obviously, this has taken so long is, yeah, it should have come out, and it should have, all of it should have happened with the original lineup. It didn't. But that's, you know, at the time it was devastating, and sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees, and you think like, I didn't think we could recover from it when we lost Mario and Steve, and I really didn't. And Keith was like, I'm telling you, dude, you know, that's the great thing about him. And the great thing about our friendship is we're able to just, you know, prop each other up during difficult times. Mm-hmm. And he said, Dimitri, I'm telling you, dude, we're going to find two stud rockers, and it's going to be better than you could have ever imagined. And I'm going, what's he talking about? He's insane. And slowly but surely it started to come into focus. And when that first time the four of us played, it was, I put down the guitar after playing one song, and I just said, you know, initially it was just like, we needed someone to play on this Metallica track. You know, they asked us to cover Holier. Well, we picked Holier Than Thou, but, you know, he was just doing things that, you know, I'm used to playing with rock drummers, and he's not a rock drummer. He came into it like, I know Bad Brains, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that's been missing from my career. You know, he's you know, like Thundercat, Steven, and his brother, Ronald Bruner Jr., they were the rhythm section in Suicidal Tendencies. Mm. And his friend Thomas Pridgen played in Mars Volta, you know. And so he's looking around at his peers, and they've all gotten to play like really intense music. And he saw this as like this really special opportunity. And so, yeah, we just, the train started rolling and gaining momentum, and it all happened really quickly once we had the lineup.
Cause that is very brave to stay on that road. And it sounds like you had to sell it to Keith early on. And then when you were in your darkness, he did the, you know, Luke Skywalker thing to bring you through to the.
Totally. And once he invests, you know, once he believes in something, mm-hmm. He really fucking cares, man. You know, there were times where I didn't think the film was going to happen. And I saw, you know, and I would say to him like, hey, look, you know, if the film doesn't happen, at least it got us to think about the album in a different way. And we wrote these great songs, you know, that never would have occurred if we hadn't thought of it as a soundtrack. And he would get visibly emotional and say, Dimitri, we have to make the movie, you know? And I would would say to myself, okay. And I would tell him, like, all right, you know, like once I saw how much he was invested, I promised him we'd make the movie. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I promised him we'd make the film. And
looking at the videos, I haven't seen the movie, obviously, but seeing the glimpses with the different videos that are out there, the other actors in there, I mean, obviously you've got a bit of an acting background, but then there's Keith. I'm not sure if he's ever acted in anything. There's Autry, and Dom Bowles is in it.
We have Christy from The Flesh Eaters.
Mm-hmm.
David
Yao. Yeah, all these guys. I don't think they, and again, maybe they have acting experience, but it doesn't seem, it seems very professional. It seems like they're all on cue. They're into their characters. I've seen films before that have been done with non-actors, and they feel very corny. This does not feel corny. This feels very intense. It's got an aesthetic. It's got, you know, the depth of field. Like, it looks like, oh my God, all these people are really living this.
Yeah, it's the real deal, you know? Like, it surpassed everyone's expectations, and I have a strong feeling that people will be entertained by it and surprised by it. It's designed to be a midnight movie, but it turned out there's some sophistication to it, you know, like
It's not like a trauma release. It's
there's some legitimate sci-fi, and it's super goofy. A lot of the time, but there's an element of horror. A couple of people who have seen it have said that it has a Sam Raimi vibe, you know, like, I don't really know what to make of it. It's weird. It's like, it's a love story. It's a story about, following your dreams. And it's carrying in the tradition of, you know, all those album movies that we grew up with, Pink Floyd, The Wall, and Purple Rain, and you know, stuff like that, and stuff from the 60s, you know, like Tommy or Quadrophenia. Yeah, we're definitely trying to make, like, hey. It's like the album and the film have the same name. They're connected. It's this whole experience. You have one experience when you listen to the album. You have another experience when you see the film, but they're joined at the hip.
Well, look, I listeners of the show know that I love this band. And when good things happen to good people and you just feel proud for them, like hearing the album when it came out, and just seeing how it was being received really just made me feel good, because I know how much you guys worked on it. And then Keith and I are kind of friendly, you know, we communicate, we send records back and forth and that sort of thing. And
oh, that's awesome.
Just seeing that the work was paying off, and there was this, what I think is, you know, one of the best albums released last year. And hearing how it's coming together. And that's what's getting me really excited about the movie, because seeing those clips, that is a whole nother level that I can't wait to experience. One other thing that's happened with the band is you've signed with Fat Possum. Now, talk to me about that changeover. You guys were on Vice. You went to Fat Possum. You brought your catalog over there. Is that part of the grand plan here for all the different pieces coming together?
Well, you know, we just always made a point of hanging on to our masters. I mean, that's really, you kind of have to do that. You know, there's no reason really to sign your work away anymore. And so we just, it's always been a licensing game for us. And, the masters reverted back to us. You know, that's maybe one of the advantages of waiting so long to release Free LSD is, we were able to shop around with all the records in play. Mm-hmm. Fat Possum was Actually, my friend John Kastner from Doughboys and Asexuals, it was his idea to talk to Fat Possum, and it was instantly interesting to me because I've spent money on that label, you know. Yeah. I to be honest, I don't listen much to rock music anymore. I don't really play electric guitar much anymore for myself. You know, I can tell you I bought all those Townes Van Zandt reissues from them, and you know, like R.L. Burnside and you know, Junior Kimbrough and stuff like that. All there's so much good blues on that label, and but also you know, a really eclectic roster. I mean, we're label mates with Spiritualized and, you know, Iggy and the Stooges and Royal Trucks and Waves, and you know, we've always made a point very early on of kind of going against you know, what's expected of having Keith as our front man. We wanted to be taken seriously as a new band, and we wanted to play festivals where, you know, it's not just a bunch of other punk bands. You know, we want to play with the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and Mars Volta and you know, Guided by Voices or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And so the label reflects that, and it's been an incredible fit. I mean, Vice was really cool in a different way. You know, they're more of a marketing machine, and that's really what we signed up for, and it worked to our advantage initially. You know, but Fat Possum is first and foremost a record label, and I can feel the difference where that's concerned, and it's been really, really great so far.
As I understand, they also have their own record pressing capabilities.
Yeah.
Which came in real handy.
It helps when everybody else has a, you know, a 7 to 9 month wait or whatever.
So he was just able to kind of put you guys right up front then. So when it came time for doing the reissues, it was much more predictable. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're really serious about vinyl and doing, you know, and, you know, having great packaging and everything sounds really good. And yeah, it's cool. And we've been able to do weird stuff and, you know, glow in the dark elements, you know, like if you next time you hold free LSD and you open that gatefold, just hold it up to the light and then shut all the lights out, and you'll have a different experience.
Now this gatefold here, this appears to be a control board that I from a clip of the movie. Is
correct?
That right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, there's this mechanism in the movie called the Machine, and you know, it's a really important part of the story, and so we felt it would be a great way to connect the artwork to the movie, and I was able to take it a step further. So I mentioned W.T. Nelson before, who was in Bastard Noise and a bunch of other things like Geronimo. And he's just a really great, great guy. And he's done a lot of the artwork for Bastard Noise, and it caught my eye. And I, you know, got in touch with him, and he said he'd love to help out with the artwork. I mean, obviously it's Raymond Pettibone on the cover, but he did the design. He laid out everything else. And the more we got into the gatefold, especially, and we knew there, we wanted to have this sort of, because the movie takes place in between two different dimensions, we thought it'd be cool. Like if you turn the lights out, there's another layer that's revealed and it tells another story. So what is revealed? I'm going to break it down here on the vinyl guide for the first time, for whoever hasn't figured this out yet. When you turn out the lights, you'll see a schematic, and if you are savvy with electronics, you can actually take that schematic and build a synthesizer based on, yeah. And I have the prototype and I used it on Free LSD. And it's something that, you know, is going to be a collaboration between Trogatronic and Off. We're just waiting for the right time. But he also built the machine. It's not just a prop in the movie. I have the only one in the world. It's built into a vintage Halliburton case, and it's a functional synthesizer that lights up, and it's an incredible art piece. And we're gonna make I think they're gonna be like 5 total. I have 4 more Halliburton cases that I've sent them, and we'll eventually sell those as well. Once the film comes out and people realize like what it is. But yeah, you can play it. He makes, his company Trogatronic is, I mean, if you look at the liner notes for most noise artists these days, he's thanked. Like Trogatronic is thanked. Everyone plays his stuff. And wow. So it's an incredible, incredible honor to collaborate with him. And if anybody out there hasn't heard the album Rogue Astronaut by Bastard Noise, do yourself a favor. It was very inspirational to me.
I'll put a link to it in the episode page.
It's a masterpiece. And yeah, anybody who likes that kind of music knows that.
So heavy electronic, is it noise?
It's noise, electronics, you know, rooted in an industrial, it's cinematic, it's brutal, it's gorgeous, it's mm-hmm. all over the place. And they always thought of it as like they were making soundtracks to movies that were in their mind. You know.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I'll definitely check that out. There'll be a link to that album in this episode page. What one other thing? While I have the album in my hands, this is the first color Off record cover, I believe. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think there was some 45s and some color.
It was always intentional. I'm glad you brought this up because we knew this album was going to be like, I had a conversation with Raymond Pettibone in I think 2013, and we're getting ready to do Wasted Years. And I said, okay, Raymond, the next album is going to have a black background for the first time with the logo in white. And we're going to record everything in our rehearsal space onto like 8-track reel to reel tape. It's going to have a demo feel. The subject matter is going to be a little darker. And then the record after that, we're going to want your artwork in full color because we're going to pull out all the stops and do everything that we're not supposed to do as a punk band. And we're going to get really, really out there and set the controls for the Heart of the Sun. So this is always, this concept has existed going way back. Yeah. It's really cool to see it all come to fruition this many years later.
Yeah. So you've been thinking about this transition, this sequence for well over a decade, black on white background, then Wasted Years. Everything was white on a black background. It seems you chewed the flavor out of that and are now kind of moving into color. And Raymond, does he do a lot of color work? I'm just familiar with mainly his black and white work.
Yeah, these days it's mostly color, I would say. Like if you go to one of his shows, there's lots and lots of color on the walls. Yeah.
Okay. And Do you talk through the concepts with him? Like, it's got a UFO on the cover, both this and the EP, which we'll talk about shortly. But you say, great, we're thinking about something around conspiracy theories and UFOs.
Or does no. he, how does that work?
No, he just kind of, it was really cool when he lived here, in LA. Well, actually it was Venice. He had a studio in Venice, and, you know, in the early days of Off, we would go and he was just, it was so cool. We were nervous about playing him our four song demo, you know, which ended up literally being it wasn't a demo at all. Those versions we thought were demos became the first four songs on first four EPs on that first EP. And we picked him up. We were going to see Mike Watt and Pedro. And, you know, like he's in our van, he was in the back bench seat, and Keith was shotgun. I was driving, and I was like, okay, Raymond, we're going to play you we're going to play you our band, you know? And he's like, all right, hit it. And we put it in, and, you know, the four songs were over 4 minutes. And he just goes, pull up to that liquor store right there. And I'm like, okay. And he gets out, he comes back, and he has a six pack of Nips. And, you know, like little bottles of booze.
Okay.
Like vodka or whatever you. Mm-hmm. And I just start driving, and he starts drinking one, and he's just like, he goes, that's some of the best punk rock I've heard in a long, long time. And I'd be honored to be a part of it, and you can use anything you want of mine, you know. And we're like, oh my God. And so we would go hang out at his place, and he would just open up the vaults and whatever you want to use, you know, as long as it hadn't been used before. But we would just say, can we use this? Can we use this? And he'd be like, yep. So I think the only time that he actually created something based on us giving him any kind of direction was that Live at the 9:30 Club cover.
Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah. So that was we had a Farrah Fawcett poster, and it said like, yeah, there it is. Yeah. And so hold it up.
Yep.
It was an actual photograph of Farrah Fawcett, and it was like an ad for Wella Balsam. And it said, Farrah loves Wella, and so will you. And we put a sticker over the Wella. So it said, Farrah loves Off, and so will you. And we sent him that, and he did that. But he's just the coolest. I mean, we used to play wiffle ball with him in his studio. You know, so he's pitching me the wiffle ball, and I've got the bat, and I would step back. He's got artwork everywhere. I'd step back, and I'm like, oh shit, you know, and I realized like I'd stepped on a piece of his artwork, and like my shoe print is like on the artwork, you know, and it's probably like $20,000 piece of artwork. And he's just like, oh, just kick it out of the way. I'm like, oh dude, I'm so like, I got a shoe print on it. He goes, that's cool. That made it even better. You know, like he's unreal, man. Like never met anyone like him. Wow. He's always just been so supportive, you know, and it's obviously we just think of him as our visual fifth member.
When you were playing those demos to him, was the band already named Off?
Yes.
Okay. What's the story of that? Cause it would seem like it's another bug spray.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to like a bugs. I started looking up bug sprays, and I called up Keith, and I said, Raid is taken, but Off is not. What do you think about Off? And he's like, well, it has to have the exclamation mark. And I said, okay. And that was it. Done. And then actually, you know, SC Johnson like kind of came knocking saying like, whoa. Because we realized that the trademark to print off on clothing was available. I mean, you know, we definitely knew it was available in terms of us being a band and making records and printing off on recorded music and all that. But it was also available for merchandise, and we took it. And then SC Johnson was like, wait a minute. What if we've been a company for so since the beginning of time? And what if we want to put off on clothing? And so, you know, the lawyer, like our lawyer had to talk to their lawyer, and you know, we were able to convince them that there's not going to be much confusion between the bug spray and, like, you know, a band that Keith Morris is fronting, you know. And so there we worked it out so they can print off, you know, on their stuff and we can do off on our stuff. But it was pretty scary to see a letter arrive, you know, like SC Johnson versus Coates Morris. Like, yeah. Oh shit.
So in this whole timeline continuum, I would imagine you also have ideas of what the band will be doing or some of the design aesthetics for the next 5 or 10 years. Would that be fair?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay, grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with 2 Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits.
In this whole timeline continuum, I would imagine you also have ideas of what the band will be doing or some of the design aesthetics for the next 5 or 10 years. Would that be fair?
I love Keith, right? I love him like a brother, and we're the best of friends. We've talked about this, and you know, he's in great shape. I mean, I think this is his finest hour, and I'm incredibly proud to be a part of that. You know. His ability to shine, you know, in the autumn of his career. I mean, he's just an incredible artist. And but that being said, I feel like this should be our last record. It was such an undertaking, and it was completely worth fighting for. And I think it speaks for itself. And I just don't know if we should try to top it. I think we should just go out like this with something that, you know, we feel can maybe stand the test of time. And we think we're aware that we made a really important record. And I think if he wants to go do Circle Jerks, more power to him. And certainly he can play to more people and make more money doing that. For me, I've gotten so much out of being in this band. It redefined both of our careers but it's always been about our friendship and it's been at times really hard for me to exist in his world. It's not my world. It's not where I come from. And sometimes I feel like I'm playing a role, maybe that's where the acting background comes in. But I'm a lot more than that person, I'm a lot more than the guitar player in Off. And like I told you before, I just have other interests. And I think, making this movie has made me realize that, there's the next chapter of my life is waiting, and I'm not getting any younger either. And if I'm going to be a filmmaker, I really need to see where this takes me. And I'll never stop making music, but I write very, very different songs when I write for myself, and I like picking up the acoustic guitar and I get my singer songwriter on, I don't think anybody cares about hearing my music, but I have to do it. And it's given me great joy to, be by Keith's side and play a part in, elevating him, to where he belongs. And I'm just so happy that I can stand back and, watch him, still, shine as an artist. And that's really what it's, I've always said, like, I think of myself more as like a director in this band, and he's like, he's the star, he's the lead. He's the guy that everybody, lines up to see. And I'm just kind of more, the guy behind the curtains, running some of the machinery and I've been fine with that. But I think it's time for me to explore other things, if for some reason, the movie's like some huge success and there's this incredible demand all of a sudden for Off that never existed. And we can go from, being in a van and playing, clubs, which is all we've known. It's all I've known. Keith has obviously, been in much bigger situations. Then maybe we have to, rethink everything. But I would just like to, I'd like to just, drop the mic, in our finest hour.
So first off, that made me incredibly sad, but I could understand why. It's like Michael Jordan retiring after he won that final championship. He's going out on top. He doesn't want to be out there decaying or giving less than he knows or that he wants to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a survival story, and we became stronger for it and made better music because of it. And the film benefited from the struggle. Mm-hmm. I just don't think I can personally, with or without Keith, make a stronger statement in terms of like being in a rock band. Like, this is, I don't think I want to be a rock musician anymore. And so I'm very, very happy with, you know, leaving things the way they are with Free LSD and FLSD EP.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a total companion piece, you know, to Free LSD. It's it has four songs on the A side that are at 45 RPM because they're pretty short songs. And one of these songs, the first song, which we released a video for, Keep Your Mouth Shut, is featured in the film. And the reason we left it off the album, because it totally is strong enough to be on there, is we needed a really good song that establishes the band in the film before we make the album. Because what happens is we're these other characters that don't know each other, and we're not living very fulfilling lives, and we get a glimpse into this other reality where, you know, we're in this band together. And it's extremely exciting. And so when each of us frog hops into this other dimension, we find ourselves like playing the final song of this set. And it's that song, Keep Your Mouth Shut. I think the other three songs on the record are on this EP are you know, like these are like some of Autry's favorite songs. He was bummed out that they didn't make the record, you know?
Wow. So
I didn't mean to make you sad, Nate.
No. Well, look, when Off started, that's right when my wife and I started having kids. So, you know, when you have kids, there's like the first 8-10 years, you don't know anything except Pixar movies. You know, you don't go out that much. It's just, you know, all consuming.
Yeah.
So it's only in the last few years that we've been able to kind of venture out again and to do, you know, different things. And recently I live in Australia. I was traveling in the US and I was due to fly home on a certain date. And then I heard Off was playing in LA, the Lodge Room. And I was like, fuck. I just bought two tickets. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm just going to get there somehow. I'm going to figure it out, you know? And I ended up just diverting the flight, my whole plan to make it to that show and just fly out the next day.
You were there?
And I was there. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Right up front. It was fucking great. It was brilliant. And I'm so glad I did. So I was able to, you know, kind of get one of those shows under my belt, which I, you know, I'm very happy with. One question is, this is now, it now sounds kind of like the Off victory lap. You guys have done this album. You're getting ready to do the movie. You're doing some tours.
Yeah.
Are you going international? Is there a chance we'll see you in Australia at some point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's something I'm actually working on right now. Yeah. We really, really, really want to go to Australia. We really want to go to South America, you know, we want to go everywhere that anyone will have us. We've already been to Europe once. We just did a short, you know, like just a, you know, a, like a week of shows or whatever. And, you know, we went to Paris and Berlin and Amsterdam, Antwerp, Hamburg, you know, and we're going to go back. We did London. We're going to go back, to Europe. Coming up in June with all the Prima,
yeah.
You know, but even after that, we're going in August. We have a festival to play in Poland, another festival in Portugal. Where else I'm forgetting. And I know we're working on another UK tour, that's going to happen later in the year. Yeah, there's a whole bunch. Like, it's kind of overwhelming when I look at the calendar. I can't talk about some of the stuff because it's not announced or not confirmed. But we're going to be very busy this year, and we expect this. We knew this album cycle was always intended to be a much longer album cycle than anything we've done in the past. Usually, you just make a record and you know, it might last a year, year and a half, but this will probably go well into 2024, just because when the film comes out, we anticipate another wave of interest, you know. Yeah. I mean, hope so anyway. Not in any hurry to like hang it up. I didn't want to, you know, make it sound like, you know, we're over. If you ask Keith this question, he'll be like, well, we're going to see how this all plays out. You know, I think there've been times where, you know, maybe he said, this is our last record, and, you know, and now maybe I'm saying that, and things can change. It's just that I just think it's fucking cool. Like I watched this documentary on Nolan Ryan, you know?
Okay. Baseball player. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. And you know, he kept throwing these no hitters, you know, like even late into his career, like, you know, like at the end of his career, he threw like a no hitter. It was just like unbelievable. And I feel like Keith has done that. I feel like we've done that. You know, we threw a no hitter, right? You know, like people might've forgotten about us. And then here we come, you know, like how many 8 years after Wasted Years, and we throw in a no hitter. And I just feel like, you know, when I watched this Nolan Ryan documentary, like he kept going after that. And like the last game he played, you know, he like threw this, I think it was like a grand slam home run, like something, a grand slam off of him. And then he tried to keep playing, and he just blew out his arm, and his it was just over. It was a career ending injury. And so he walked off the field like that. And it just would have been so much more epic I don't think he had the option, but if he could just like after that no hitter, just been like, thank you, you know?
Yeah.
So that's just my feeling about it. I'm not making any big statements. I'm just telling you how I feel.
Yeah. And it's totally understandable because again, you guys have climbed a very high mountain with Free LSD.
Yeah.
And if you look at careers, who's had a better third act than Keith? Right. I mean, he had Black Flag and then Circle Jerks, you know, I mean,
he's three back for three, man.
He's got a whole bunch of midget hand jobs and other bands kind of scattered throughout there. But, you know, he is truly going out on top. And by the way, I'm familiar with project management and kind of managing activities and events and promotions and things like that. I see the work that you do. I see the hand of Dimitri that slowly kind of nudges people towards the same direction. And, yeah. And a lot of this third act is credit to your inspiration, your friendship with him, and your partnership, and your vision as well.
I'm very lucky that he's trusted in me, and, mm-hmm. He's believed in certain visions that I've presented and, you know, that we've, sort of molded together. That's really what it's all about for me. You know, like he's awesome in the movie, dude. Like, and I had a lot of people, you know, doubt his abilities. Cause you know, he isn't an actor, you know, he is a,
right.
And I had to tell some of the, you know, because there are some great actors in our film, man. Like, you know, James Duvall has, you know, been in, you know, Doom Generation and Donnie Darko, and you know, some like real badass people. S.A. Griffin, Barry Del Sherman. Barry Del Sherman has been in, like, you know, American Beauty and, you know, opposite Kevin Spacey, and like There Will Be Blood opposite Daniel Day-Lewis. And like, we've got Jack Black, and there's Keith in the lead fucking role. And I had people go like, are you sure you know what you're doing, dude? You know, like it's grueling to be in a lead in any film for anybody at any age. And, you know, like, and I just said, look, I wrote the role for him. I know him. I know him very well. And I know his strengths. I know his weaknesses. And I'm putting him in a position where I think he's going to shine. And he really does, man. He is he's really, really great in this movie. I can't fucking wait for people to see him, especially. They're just not gonna believe it.
I've seen those little clips, and it's him act. When you put a non-actor next to someone who's done that craft for years, it's pretty clear. You see the differential there. And in those clips that I've seen, there's no differential. He's holding up his own entirely.
I told those actors, I said, look, you know, you're going to have to walk the tightrope a little bit. You know, Keith is at his best, as an actor, when, you know, he knows what's going on in the scene. He knows what needs to happen. He has a pretty good idea of what he has to say and what the point is, you know? But how he gets from point A to point B, might be a little different than what's written on the page, you know? And that was really exciting to most of the actors, like, oh, right on. Like, so we might have to do some improv, and, you know,
little Larry David kind of thing.
Yeah. So exactly. So, you know, the script was, I just said to people, the script is there for, you know, for anybody who needs it or wants it or, you know, needs that blueprint, but just understand there's going to be some spontaneity. And, and it really worked well. And people were very, very, very cool to him and very respectful and pleasantly surprised at, you know, I had somebody say to me, one of our co-producers, and he's also in the film, great actor, Gil Gale, also our production designer. And we were talking about Keith's performance, and he's just like, you know, like, he's like, I knew on that first day, do you remember, like, I pulled you aside and I said, he's gonna be fucking great, because his eyes tell the truth, you know? And that's such a big part of acting, you know? And I remember our main producer, Kurt Kittleson, just when we started seeing some of the footage back, and you can get really close on Keith, and his eyes are just so expressive. It's a very, very, like, it's a very touching performance at times. He's fucking awesome, man. I'm so proud of him. so proud of him.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see it. Okay, look, I know it's getting late for you. Real quick, the FLSD EP, it's coming out Record Store Day, April 22nd. There's four new tracks, and there's four, the best way to refer to the other side, for soundscapes,
like full versions of FLSD,
right,
from Free LSD. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And how many of those are pressed? Is there a limited number?
Yes. And Fat Possum expects it to be completely sold out. And we're not allowed to sell them on the road. You can only get them, you know, the whole point of Record Store Day is to support your local record store, and you have to walk in and hopefully, you know, there'll be a copy there for everybody who wants one. And I would say to make sure to do it now if you haven't already, like, call up or walk into your local store and make sure they're going to have, you know, copies for you.
Yeah. It's the only way. Make friends with the clerks, bring them lunch.
Yeah.
Get on their good stuff.
You know, otherwise you're going to be having to deal with Discogs and eBay and shit like that, you know.
So there you have it. Okay, it's limited number, FLSD EP, coming out Record Store Day, April 22nd. This is your chance to get the off EP. It sounds like it will sell out. I believe it's a purple color from what I've seen in the pictures. So, again, get to your local record shop early, line up, grab a copy of this. And, Dimitri, again, it's an absolute pleasure to be spending this time with you to talk through a lot of these questions I've had. I've spent hours looking through my off records and listening to them and looking at all the little art things here and there and all the questions I've had. And I really appreciate you being very open and honest and revealing with a lot of those bits. And I really look forward to seeing the movie. So as soon as we have a plan for that, please come back on the show and let's talk about what that's going to be like. And I hope to see you guys here in Australia and hopefully in other parts of the world here shortly.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. And I know it's always Keith's pleasure, and we're a fan of what you do, and we really appreciate the support, and we'll be happy to come back on the show anytime.
Well, there we go, Mr. Dimitri Coates of the band Off. And don't forget, write this down. Top of the list, Record Store Day, FLSD EP from Off. It's available at independent record stores. Deluxe package, 4 new songs, and a side of soundscapes from the movie. And it sounds like it's in very limited numbers. So again, a very thoughtful release from one of my favorite bands. Ask your record clerks for the FLSD EP on Record Store Day. That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Post them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter. And it's always helpful if you leave a positive review as well. Hop on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever. I think you can do 5 out of 5 stars. Say something nice. That's always appreciated. We'll be back very shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.